Good morning, good morning, good morning. Hope everybody is feeling right and living well on this Tuesday. Happy to have you along for the ride the next 3 hours. Just you, me, Lucas Panzeca, the whole crew. If you want to get involved, 615-737-1045 is the number. 615-737-1045, because we're talking rivalry week in college football today. Josh Pate of CBS Sports HQ and the Late Kick Show with Josh Pate is going to be here coming up next. He's got some really, really good thoughts on what's happening in a coaching carousel that's as exciting as any in college football has been in quite some time. We're, of course, going to spend some time on the rivalry game that will be played in the state of Tennessee, Vanderbilt at Tennessee on this Thanksgiving weekend. And Ramon Foster will be here to cause some strife for Vanderbilt fans as a 31-point road dog. I don't know how I feel about that line just because I've seen Vanderbilt do enough or did enough on Saturday against Ole Miss at Oxford to kind of cause problems for Tennessee.
I'm surprised by the line. Tennessee over a South Alabama was like 27.5.
I think people just, I don't want to start laughing at Vanderbilt that way, but I think people just kind of think Vandy and laugh. Like, I think South Alabama, just because you don't know what South Alabama's done this year, you have no idea. Now, Vegas, I'm sure, does when they're setting the lines, and you have people whose, livelihoods depend on this stuff who are researching this at a far greater rate than we are. But I think there's just an inherent disrespect that comes with playing football at Vanderbilt University. 31 points is wild to me. The fact that it was, what, it was like 27.5 against South Alabama in Neyland Stadium, and this is a bigger line.
I think South Alabama could beat Vanderbilt when healthy.
Stop it.
You have a former SEC quarterback in Jake
Stop
Bentley.
Stop it.
In the top 3-round wide receiver.
Why are you doing this to Vandy fans?
I'm sorry. I think it's a fact.
You think that South Alabama could beat Vanderbilt?
You're talking about a team that got blown out by FCS East Tennessee State.
I know, but
and they are playing more competitively as of late. I'll give them that. To lose
That's
by 14
That's what I'm saying.
Oxford
like
is...
it's not the same team that lost to a Tennessee
right.
directional school, all right? I'm familiar with losing to directional schools.
You're well versed.
Oh, it's the worst. It's why I hate these early college basketball games, cuz my team could actually lose one. Whereas Tennessee is cruising against everybody but Villanova. We'll talk college basketball, I'm sure, at some point, but probably not until football season's done. Anyway, what's the best rivalry in college football this weekend? 615-737-1045 is the number. Because I think that, for the lack of competitiveness that Vanderbilt shows year in and year out, they get up for this game. They exist to kind of bother you. At this point, for no other reason, because they're not going to a bowl this year, even though who was our guy that called in, I think from Mount Juliet yesterday, and said was congratulating Vanderbilt fans on playing in a bowl game, except that bowl game is Tennessee at Neyland Stadium, in-state bowl game.
South Alabama might play in a bowl game.
All right, stop.
Just saying.
Back to the shadows. But there's a lot of great games or a lot of fun games this weekend that can get a little messy. I think that you're looking at teams like Ohio State and Michigan, obviously, is the marquee matchup. I think that you go down the list. Georgia Tech is terrible, so I don't think Georgia is going to have much of a problem there at all. But when you're talking about Florida State, Florida, and this one without Dan Mullen, I want to see how much worse it could get at Florida, don't you? Aren't you just waiting? Not actual fires in Gainesville. But you kind of feel pretty good about seeing everything just starting to crumble around your most hated, vehemently hated rival.
That could be a sneaky good game.
Sneaky good or sneaky good because of how bad it could be?
Because
I'm kind of rooting for
that. Well, that's what's great about college football. Bad is good.
Bad is good.
Bad games are good.
Well, I don't know. There was a lot of bad games this weekend, and precious few of them were good. So we'll talk about this with Josh Pate. Coming up next, and kind of get into the nuts and bolts of Vanderbilt and Tennessee, because 5 of the last 9 in favor of Vanderbilt, it's It is a rivalry. These two fan bases hate each other. Lucas is perpetually just sitting behind that microphone. He's going to lose his mind when Ramon Foster comes in here or when we call Ramon Foster at 12:20, basically just for the purposes of letting Lucas cause Vanderbilt fans angst. Like, it's a real thing. This year feels less even. This year feels like because of what Tennessee's offense is and because the defense has overachieved and Vanderbilt, I mean, just they have lost games in such heartbreaking fashion, even for Vandy fans this season. Several, I've seen a lot of them while I'm in airports traveling to Titans games this season. Vanderbilt's always on in like the early morning slot, the 11 o'clock slot. I'm watching Vanderbilt football at 9 a.m. in Seattle for God knows what reason, other than I hate myself, I guess. I don't know. But they can, and as we've seen, Tennessee is not without flaw. Now, 7 wins is the goal, and I think that this is a good enough team, even without the depth that they so clearly and obviously have, they can handle Vanderbilt this weekend. But, I mean, the Iron Bowl is going to get super interesting in the SEC West. Auburn, is Brian Harsin going to keep his job? I mean, we're talking about USC, LSU, Florida. They're already a part of the godforsaken coaching carousel. But I don't necessarily know, based on either his vaccination status, which is unclear, but some audio from Chris Lowe on 3HL that we're going to play for you, as well, whether there's not going to be a pretty shocking firing, maybe not necessarily shocking, but a pretty major firing to go alongside with those three jobs that you know are already going to be open and going to be hotly contested. I mean, think about where the conversation around James Franklin has revolved around. For all of these great jobs that James Franklin was being rumored for, can you imagine him at USC? He would be an unholy terror. And not, I think, in ways of actual competitiveness. I think if you put that guy in a job of that size, it could snowball very, very quickly. But Chris Lowe, for all of the things that have happened in this coaching carousel already, it sounds like James Franklin is going to end up back at Penn State?
I'll start with James Franklin. I think James is on the cusp of re-signing at Penn State. And if he does, and I think it's going to happen, he's going to get a really sweet deal. So I think maybe you could – I wouldn't scratch him off in pen or the kind of pen you can't erase, but I think you're going to see him re-up at Penn State here pretty shortly.
Which is unthinkable. A month ago, even. He's changing agents. He's getting ready for one of these massive jobs. And now Dave Aranda apparently is the favorite to come back from Baylor – or to come back to LSU from Baylor after trying to get them turned around and done a pretty good job with it this season. Of course, they, Baylor, have Texas Tech this weekend in a game. Baylor at number 11. I'm pretty sure that Baylor would be a heavy favorite, and they are at home at this point. They are not a heavy favorite, but 2 touchdowns. Still substantial in a rivalry game when the opponent is 6-5. But more than anything, I think that the Egg Bowl is probably the premier game outside of Ohio State and Michigan, because it seems like Ohio State is just going to roll right into the postseason again with what they did to Michigan State. I thought about betting Michigan State in that game, and for some reason, I have terrible betting instincts. Some reason internally, I talked myself out of it, because what they are doing is ridiculous to teams at this point. And their defense, since they took the play calling away from Kerry Coombs, former Titans defensive back coach, drinker of 75 cups of coffee a day with the whitest teeth that I've ever seen in my life. I need to know what Kerry Coombs is doing or who his dentist is. Not that I don't like my dentist, but you know what I'm saying. I think that there's a lot of good football to watch this weekend after what was unsatisfactory with a lot of cupcake games. We'll talk about it with Josh Pate of CBS Sports HQ of the Late Kick Show with Josh Pate. He's one of the smartest minds in college football, and he's based here in Nashville. So we'll talk about Rivalry Week with Josh Pate coming up next. I was reading The Athletic this morning. Our buddy Joe Rex wrote a really good column about Vols on the current roster who have survived the last couple of years, from Butch Jones through Jeremy Pruitt, and what he called Shiano Sunday which is one of the most ridiculous moments in all of college football coaching search history. And it was one of my favorite moments, just as the coaching carousel probably is every time this year. It's like NFL free agency. It's like the draft. I don't know why I enjoy it as much as I do, but I feel like our next guest, Josh Pate of 247 Sports and CBS Sports HQ, is of like-mindedness on this. What's up, buddy?
I get stuck with that. Is it like-mindedness? Is it of like mind?
God, you heard me too. You heard me struggle.
I pick up on it because we are very like-tongued. It's tough.
God, that's so much smoother than how I just did it. Thank you for that. Thank you for trying to save my bit.
But yes, I do. I do agree with you. I mean, I follow flight tracking just as ardently as everyone else does this time of year. I think really this entire process got sullied when universities found out how to block the tail numbers of these planes, which I view as un-American at the very least, sure, and criminal at the very most. But there are ways around it. You just have to know proper people in proper places in the aviation world.
I don't know why it gets me going the way that it does when people are literally tracking down flights, like notable college football reporters are putting out flight information and basically acting like an air traffic controller on my Twitter timeline. Something about I'm a sadist this way, Josh. I don't know why I enjoy it as much as I do.
Do you know, yesterday or 2 days ago, I'm not going to mention the guy because he does great work, but this dude was actually sucked into the world where you talk about how different kinds of aircraft travel at different elevations.
No!
Oh, it was great, man. I spent a good 10 minutes of my life reading that.
Oh, my God. Josh Pate is our guest here on 104.5 The Zone. You can check out The Late Kick with Josh Pate. It's live every Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday at 7 Central Time, 8 Eastern, for our friends in East Tennessee. So what is the best job opening at this point before we get into the actual football that's coming up this weekend?
I think that LSU job is the best one open. I felt this way before they let Orgeron go. I felt like one of the biggest misnomers out there was the athletic department, like the entire football program. It was just on fire and it was burning to the ground, which sometimes is the case when you have a head coach, you know, go off the rails to the degree that Orgeron let it get out of control down there. But it really hasn't been that way. They have, top to bottom, a really good administrative infrastructure built. If you'll notice, by the way, there haven't been a bunch of their players getting arrested off the field. There hasn't been a mass exodus to the transfer portal. There have been some guys leave. Right. Rick's left yesterday. But there hasn't been this mass exodus. Well, what that means is it's not a top-to-bottom issue. It was a top issue. And once you get the head coach out of there, whoever gets plugged back in is inheriting a very, very good roster. Recruiting has not fallen off drastically for them. It won't. There are a lot of kids who are just going to go to LSU regardless. So I think it's a ready-made winner. I think you've got all the proper administrative infrastructure in place, and you don't ever have to ask the question, I wonder if LSU is going to be fully invested. And you would think from a 50,000-foot view that you wouldn't ask that about Florida either. And you shouldn't have to ask it, but sometimes they still do have to ask it around Florida. So if you were to be able to answer that question for me, like, are they going to be invested to the degree that Alabama and LSU are, well, then Florida takes a backseat to no one in this whole conversation. But I, to this point, could not, without a little hesitance in my voice, answer that.
Scott Robillet, I believe, is how the name of the columnist at The Advocate in Baton Rouge is pronounced. He is reporting that former defensive coordinator Dave Aranda may be the prime candidate as LSU's coaching search winds down. Now, he got out after the 2019 Natty, and so he's not sullied by everything that's happened at LSU after the fact. All he's done is turn Baylor into a top 15 team over the course of the last couple of years. Would he make sense coming back to Baton Rouge?
He would absolutely make sense for anybody. Any of these programs open, that would be my number one go-to. Dave Aranda is going to be a star in the coaching industry somewhere. It almost sounds like I'm in, or he's in my pocket, or however in the world that's supposed to be pronounced. He's not. As man crushes go, I've got one on Dave Aranda.
Okay.
And I want to put it out there so you can asterisk whatever I'm going to say with that. But there's been this thought amongst some around LSU that they don't think Aranda would be a good enough recruiter. And what that really is sometimes in college football and sports this happens. Sometimes someone says something, and then in absence of better information to be had out there, everyone just repeats it. And so that's what happened with Aranda. Someone said once upon a time, Dave Aranda doesn't like recruiting. And everyone just bought it, and they ran with it. It's not true. I don't think it would be factual. I think they'd be fine as a recruiting power, because not only does Dave Aranda sell immediately when you sit there with him, which I did one-on-one a couple of weeks ago, but also he, I think, would put together a rock star staff, because I think a lot of guys want to work for him. That's the word around the industry. A lot of guys want to work for Dave Aranda. And I can also tell you, I think that guy is very much in ascension mode, because he, last year to this year, has grown a lot as a head coach. There were some organizational things they had to switch around that we talked to him about a couple of weeks ago. You know, offensively, he kind of evolved his approach. Everything up to and including, when should I punt versus when should I go for it? Diving in a lot more to the analytical kind of world. I think Dave Aranda would be a home run. I think a lot of folks are looking for that grand slam unicorn hire, you know, and they're looking at a Lincoln Riley, for example. I'm not telling you Lincoln Riley would be a bad hire. He'd be a great hire. But, I mean, I also watched Dave Aranda spank him pretty thoroughly a couple of weeks ago. So I'm not going to sit here and pretend like Aranda takes some distant backseat to Lincoln Riley, because to me he doesn't.
National college football analyst Josh Pate is our guest here on 104.5 The Zone. You can check out the Late Kick podcast wherever it is that you get your podcast. Josh does a great job there, as well as all of his other platforms. So I'm looking at Dan Mullen, and I'm looking at this like this. I don't want to call it the axis of evil between these giant jobs that are coming open in Florida, LSU, and USC. But these are high profile platforms, high profile institutions, and they come with a lot of scrutiny and a lot of anxiety for whoever's walking into each of these situations for different reasons. The name that gets tossed around constantly, and I'll include Miami as a part of this conversation, even though that job has not yet come open, it seems like it very well may. Why is Lane Kiffin being talked about for all of these jobs if he's this happy in Oxford?
Well, I don't think I wouldn't term him as being happy career-wise in Oxford. Quality of life, great. But Lane Kiffin, make no mistake, the day he took that job, intended to be out of there in 3 or 4 years max. I don't think that's necessarily changed. And it has nothing to do, again, with the quality of life there. It's just professionally, that's not viewed as the top rung of the ladder. That's where he wants to get. That's where he thinks he should be able to get. Here's his problem, which is not stating anything that's not already obvious. Anytime you talk to someone in the administrative world, behind the scenes at these programs, you always find that there's no indifference on Kiffin. People either are fully on board with the idea, or they would never even broach the idea. And the problem is, you have to get a pretty consensus buy-in from important decision makers to offer Lane Kiffin. And to this point, none of these major programs have had all 10 yeses. It's normally like 6 yeses, 4 no's, and those no's stand in the way of him ever getting an offer. And so with Florida, I, at the moment, get the sense that may be the situation down there. I don't know what the situation would be with Miami. It feels like he'd be a good fit with either to me, but that's the problem there. And the other problem is, there's an idea out there in the coaching world, whether you agree with it or not, and I'm not so sure I totally agree with it, but there's an idea out there that Kiffin's getting his stock a little overblown right now. He's been smart enough to rub up against guys that formerly were associated with Baylor and guys who don't have any other options. And you got Jeff Lebby there now, and you got Kendall Briles. And so they've done a lot of the work. He's gotten a lot of the credit. I'm not sure I fully buy that, but even if I were to entertain that, I would ask you this. Okay, so you're telling me he's a product of great assistance. Mm-hmm. Well, what tells you he wouldn't be able to get great assistance at another program if he were to go there, like a Florida or like a Miami? So even if you buy into that, I'm not a believer that's the reason not to hire Kiffin. If you think that there are enough character red flags, then that's got to be the only reason, because he's clearly produced on the field this year.
At Late Kick Josh is where you can follow our guest Josh Pate talking about college football. Was Florida correct in getting rid of Dan Mullen when they did?
Yes, they were. And I applaud them for making the decision. And I am normally the last one to the table. I don't even talk hot seat. I don't even do those segments. I hate them. But I do agree that it was time for them to move on. I don't think it was a knee-jerk reaction. I do think things can get out of control that quickly. And Dan Mullen's problem was the ask, you know, the risk reward of retaining him versus letting him go. That ask was going to be too steep. He was going to have to greatly upgrade their recruiting infrastructure, which he was never going to commit himself to do. And even if he did, he was going to have to hire a rock star group of assistant coaches to do it. And the word around college football had been for a year, don't go to LSU and don't go to Florida, because both of those coaches are on thin ice with hot blades. Well, if you're trying to hire a new staff, by the very nature of what Mullen had to do, he was going to have to go get the best of the best. Well, the best of the best have options, and no one with options is choosing you if the word around the industry is you're going to be gone in a year or two.
Right.
And so he was never going to be able to turn that thing around. Yes, I think they had to make that move.
Yeah, it's such an interesting kind of case study to look at Tennessee up against, right, with the way that Florida, even if they haven't been able to get it right really since Urban Meyer was there, that they don't wait to rip the Band-Aid off, whereas Tennessee is just perpetually. And we'll see what happens with Josh Heupel, because there is some promise there, but obviously, you know, there was promise with Jeremy Pruitt as well. Just the way that the universities go about it differently, I think, is interesting to kind of look at within the prism of the SEC East.
I think it's really interesting, and specifically, I think it's interesting when you dive into it a little bit to understand the intricacy of how many yeses do you need. To go back to that Kiffin thing we were talking about, some places there is one guy leading the charge, and it's his way, and that's it. Other places, and this is how Southern Cal is right now, you got about 10 different people you got to appease, and they all have input on the hire. Now, I'm not saying there's not input at LSU, but that's going to be Scott Woodward's call. And there's input at Florida. But before Strickland even made the decision to move on from Mullen, I can promise you, he gathered around with the few people whose opinion matters enough to be in the room, and he said, I want to make a move. FYI, here's how this I want to go. And I want to value this critical trait, and this critical trait. Do we all agree that this is the criteria pool with which we should be selecting a head coach from? And they got their yeses then. From that point, Scott Strickland's going and making his hire. It doesn't always work that way, though, even though it sounds like that's the common sense approach.
What you've just described to me, and Josh Pate is our guest here on 104.5 The Zone, talking about college football, what you've just described to me is basically what I just watched this past Sunday in an episode of Succession, where they're all gathered in a room together picking out the next president of the United States, except this sounds much more efficient and a hell of a lot cleaner for a lot of different reasons. What's the best rivalry game outside of Ohio State and Michigan this weekend, Josh?
I think it's actually Bedlam. I wish I could get out there, but, I mean, they have all these games on the same day. I can only go to one. I would really love to get in that environment, because they're having it at Oklahoma State. And OU cannot afford to lose that game and still go to the Big 12 title game.
Right.
They have to win it. Oklahoma State doesn't have to win it. To stay in the playoff race, they need to. But Oklahoma State's this great unknown right now. I think they're the most anonymous potential playoff caliber team that we've had in quite a while. And I sold them down the river early in the season, too. They kept winning, but it was winning over Missouri State narrowly, winning over Boise narrowly, Tulsa narrowly. And I just assumed, okay, well, I mean, that bubble will pop. They got a loss coming. Well, it didn't, because they improved. It's a developmental game, and they started to improve. And all of a sudden, you get into November, and you say, wait a second. They could make this thing. Wait a second. I can't name five players on that team. So I would love to be at that game, but I'm going to take the consolation prize of going to Michigan, Ohio State.
Yeah, the Big House is going to be rocking for this particular game. Why can Michigan push Ohio State when at this point the Buckeyes look just absolutely overwhelming?
There's a thing that I started to use this metaphor a few years ago. I call it the freeze point. It sounds really stupid, but it's the best way someone like me understands how to explain this. So if you don't get water below 32.4 degrees, it will never freeze. And if it's above it, it doesn't matter if it's 34, it doesn't matter if it's 74. You can leave it there a million years, it'll never freeze. Football is the same way. If you're not a certain caliber against the elite teams, you never stand a chance. Michigan State didn't meet the freeze point last week. They never stood a chance. Alabama does this to teams a lot. LSU 2019 did this to teams. If you didn't meet the freeze point, they would embarrass you. Even you could be the 30th best team or the 90th best team, the final score would look the same. Well, Michigan, I think, meets that freeze point. Now, the question becomes, are they right at 32? Are they 27? Because at that point, it freezes a lot quicker, obviously. But Georgia and Michigan, they meet that freeze point to where if your defenders can do nothing more than just run with receivers in the secondary, you never know how many points that's worth. You never know how many touchdowns that would have altered that Michigan State final. And so everyone is so drunk on that 56-7. I stood on the field Saturday. I was up there. I saw that. It was insane. It was a bloodletting. But we've seen it before where you get misled by a final score against the team that doesn't meet the freeze point, and all of a sudden you go up against the team in freezing weather, no less, this Saturday on the road that does meet the freeze point, and you got a young quarterback that's being put on the biggest stage of his career. It's college football, man. I'm just telling you, they're favored for a reason. I'll probably pick them to win, but crazier things have happened.
It's going to be spicy, and the late kick 2021, it's called the Renaissance Tour, which I delight in. Why is it called the Renaissance Tour?
Well, because in summer, I looked around and I realized the average age of these rosters was going to be way older because of the COVID rules and people being able to come back. We did not have any elite quarterbacks. We were going to have fans in the stands for the first time in 2 years. So that screamed to me there's going to be a lot more parity. We're going to have an appreciation and an increased passion level because folks are getting back what they didn't have. So I just coined it the Renaissance Year. And then since I go to a game every week, I call that the Renaissance Tour. And my friend, I'm going to send you a T-shirt when we finally get them made.
Oh, I will rock that because that was it. It's not just that the name of the tour is great. It's that there's an actual explanation behind it. Whereas, you know, I'm an idiot. I would have just called it my Renaissance Tour with zero explanation and been nowhere close as prepared as you just were to explain it to us. At Late Kick Josh is where you can follow Josh Pate. He works for 247 Sports. He's producing great content for CBS Sports HQ. The Late Kick Show with Josh Pate is live Sundays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays, 8 Eastern, 7 Central on YouTube. And you can subscribe to the Late Kick Pod wherever it is that you get your podcast. Buddy, enjoy the game this weekend. Stay warm. And thanks for making us smarter. We appreciate it.
Anytime, my friend. From one idiot to another, I appreciate it.
I didn't say I was an idiot. He just called me an idiot. I love Josh Pate. The best in the business here on 104.5 The Zone. He's right, though. I was whispering into Lucas's ear during that interview. I go, I hate how much better Josh Pate is at this than I am. Like, why can't I be that good? He's really, really good. You guys should check out his stuff if you're not doing it already. And he makes a lot of great points about these games coming up this weekend. The freeze point is such a great analogy for what rivalry week games are. See, this is the difference between me and Josh. He says rivalry with great confidence, and I'm terrified of saying it into a microphone. Do you have words like that as somebody who does play-by-play for a living? Like, I am terrified of rivalry, and I don't know why.
It took me a long time to get the word facetious down.
Rural. Louisville. I feel like there's a lot of words like that that I'm scared of, where it's just gonna sound like I'm slurring into the microphone.
I have a hard time saying field position. I always end up saying field possession.
I think the one that makes me hesitate the most is play clock.
For good reason.
When we come back, yes, that's the joke. Thank you for allowing me to have my subtlety by just letting it sit out there. Winners and losers of the football weekend, that's next. I love that people are sending us the words that they struggle to say now. Finger rhymes with anger when I say it, says Davey Shepard.
Oil.
For V-Love?
Oil.
My southern twang gets an ass kicked by oil, says our buddy V-Love. Should we put it to a poll? What words do you struggle to say? I don't know. I mean, why not? It's a short week. Let's have some fun with it. It's better than, I guess, me asking you what your favorite thing. Now watch. I'm going to say that, and somebody's going to do that on the air, and I'm going to feel bad because it wasn't meant as a shot at all. But like, I'm not going to do the Thanksgiving dish bit. Like, I'm just not. I don't care. I don't have issues with people who do. I truly do not. I do not care. Why are you smiling back there like I've just stepped in it? Because you know that that's going to happen this week. And now I'm going to be the bad guy.
Which college football rivalry matchup is potato salad?
Why? Listen, when you do one of these for 3 hours a day, bud, you may trip and fall into that potato salad analogy. Except, you know, I've noticed that those things went away very quickly, Titans media availabilities, when Mike Vrabel became the head coach, because the potato salad things, or analogies is not what Mike is there for. Although somebody's going to do it every year. The best, the most wonderful time of the year. We are going to do winners and losers of the football weekend. So let's go ahead and open up the circus tent, shall we? Dan Mullen's already fallen through. It happened. They got him. All it took was a loss to Missouri. And down the trapdoor he went. There it was! Hi, Dan Mullen. Winners and losers of the football weekend. If you want to nominate one, you can. 615-737-1045 is the number. 615-737-1045. I am going to nominate as my winner all of the NFL prognosticators. I hate record predictions. I hate score predictions. I hate rushing yard predictions. I hate predictions. I hate doing it as analysis. But you know who's going to end up being right about what the Super Bowl results are going to be? If not the results, at least the game at the end of the NFL season. Everybody who got out there, and it not lazily, but just kind of said, Chiefs and Bucks, probably going to be the same two teams in the Super Bowl. And for a minute, for about 10 weeks there, it didn't look like that was going to be the case. And all of a sudden in week 11, yeah, the Chiefs and the Buccaneers look like the best two teams in the NFL once again. And it's coming almost in December in ways that can just let them rattle off a couple of wins and get back to the big game in Los Angeles this year. Everybody who picked another Bucs-Chiefs Super Bowl is trending towards being the winner of the football weekend. My loser is Giants fans. For reasons that I discussed on J-Mart and Ramon this morning, Giants fans have all manner of high draft picks at quarterback, at wide receiver, at running back. You've got some of the alleged best star power or best young talent in all of football. And you know why you lose? Because your coaching staff consists of not just lap running or requiring people to run laps, Joe Judge. It's Jeremy Pruitt. It's Derek Dooley. It's Freddie Kitchens. And they're running your franchise straight into the ground. And you know who's heading up the entirety of that clown car? Jason Garrett, who is the Giants' offensive coordinator. Giants fans are miserable. And it feels like there is not any end in sight to their misery. That football team stinks. I saw Daniel Jones throw one of the worst interceptions I've seen a quarterback throw probably in the last 3 years, right into the gut of a defensive lineman yesterday. Steve McClendon, who's as big as a literal house. The one thing that you can't hit on a football field that might catch the ball, it's the grizzly bear that's trying to take you down in the backfield. And he did it yesterday. Daniel Jones is very, very bad.
My winner of the football weekend is something that Josh Pate kind of stole the thunder away from me for, but that's okay because he spelled it out very eloquently. It's Florida football.
Yeah.
Florida football for making the decision, for ripping the Band-Aid off, and for knowing exactly who they are and what they see themselves as a football program. Remember Ryan McGee last week talking about that Georgia game in 2017, year five of Butch Jones. Checker Nealon, Smokey Gray, sellout crowd. They lost 41-0. He said he ran into Butch Jones after the game, and the look in his face, Ryan McGee walked away saying, it's over.
Ryan McGee said he asked Butch Jones, hey, coach, are you okay? Like, for a mental wellness check. And apparently Butch just started babbling in cliches, and at that point, he was dead.
You knew it was over. Everybody knew it was over. And then what happened? Tennessee went into the bye week. They came out of it. They lost to South Carolina, and you knew it was over. They lost to Kentucky, and you knew it was over. They lost to Alabama. They barely beat Southern Miss. It took 6 weeks for Tennessee until they lost to Missouri in late November to finally figure out at the top of the administration that it was over and let go of Butch Jones. And what did that lead to? The most embarrassing coaching search in college football history.
Chiano Sunday.
And I realized that they probably would have hired Dan Mullen because that deal was almost done before Mullen bolted and the Florida job opened up. If that happened a week earlier, they probably would have hired Dan Mullen. He'd probably be the coach of Tennessee right now, and maybe we'd be having the same conversations as a Florida. But guess what? Tennessee wouldn't have fired him.
Do you feel like you've just gone to therapy a little bit? I feel like you had a lot of that sitting on your chest, on your shoulders, like physically weighing you down since 2017.
And I understand how people look at that and they say, well, who wants to go work for that? Where you can go to the SEC championship, have a 34-15 record, and then be ousted in year three. If that expectation turns off a candidate, you don't want to hire that candidate. You don't want to hire a candidate that's going to come in, win 8, 9, 10 games and say, is this not good enough? Jimbo Fisher understands if he doesn't win a national title at A&M, he's out. If Kirby Smart doesn't win a national title at Georgia in the next 4 or 5 years, he's out. They fired Mark Richt after going 9-3. They know who they are. They ripped the Band-Aid off. Florida football is my winner of the weekend.
Does it hurt that your greatest rival in your favorite sport is probably super competent at this point? Because I initially looked at the Dan Mullen hire and said, Scott Strickland is not dumb. He knows that if he doesn't do this, it's probably his butt that's next. So he did what Dan Mullen did in firing a couple assistant coaches and like an offensive line coach that's been with him for 20 years or something ridiculous. Scott Strickland said, no, mother bleeper, it's you. It's not me.
And that's his guy, right? They worked together at Mississippi State.
Oh, yeah.
But he knows. He knew which way it was trending. This wasn't going to get fixed. If Florida had a top 5 recruiting class, Dan Mullen would still be the coach at Florida.
Who lost the football weekend according to Lucas Panzeca?
Loser of the football weekend is Auburn because one team in the SEC has a longer losing streak than the Auburn Tigers, and that is Vanderbilt. Auburn has lost their last 3 games, and where Friday was, what, 4 days ago? We were talking about a potential 6-way tie in the SEC West, and Auburn coming out on top of that if that was the case.
Now, hold on. We were not talking about that. I looked at you and said, this is ridiculous. You sound like a conspiracy theorist coming up with different ways for the SEC West to end up in a 6-way tie.
It was my SEC stat of the day, and guess what? If Arkansas had knocked off Alabama, which they only lost by a touchdown, and Auburn had beaten South Carolina, which they lost in an awful overturned replay call in Columbia.
Do you understand that I physically see you going through the motions of the Always Sunny meme? Like, that's what you're doing behind the glass.
There is
right
no
now.
Carol in HR. Auburn is my loser of the weekend. They've lost 3 in a row. If they lose to Alabama at the Iron Bowl at home, they'll be 6-6. Nobody knows if Brian Harsin is vaccinated. I've heard rumbles about him maybe to Washington, maybe them being interested in Brian Harsin.
You can bet your ass if Auburn is going to require for him to be vaccinated that Washington State is going to look at him and be like, no, sir. You're getting the shot before you come out west.
The Auburn Tigers, who have trended very poorly in the last 3 weeks, have lost their starting quarterback to a season-ending injury, are my losers of the weekend.
Oh, God. And they have Alabama this weekend. Now, that Iron Bowl could have been sneaky great if Auburn had continued to be even as close to erratic as they have been over the course of the last month and a half and change. But they have tanked spectacularly. And Brian Harsin, I don't think any longer is safe. Like, Don Davenport is the best gauge that I have of what the Auburn fan base goes through. And your buddy, who I met at Thanksgiving or Friendsgiving this weekend, who, forgive me, I don't want to be rude, his name escapes me.
Cole, our Auburn fan?
Cole, yes, he looked like he had been through it. And Cole seemed like a very nice man, but he almost seemed shell-shocked.
They were up 14-0, and we were like, hey, there you go, buddy. And he was just shaking his head. No.
What a perpetual misery that must be. What are the people saying on social media?
It's always way more replies than the losers of the football weekend. Nobody wants to talk about the winners,
no,
right? Nobody wants to give out flowers.
Winning wildly overrated.
Eldon says the Texans for hurting their draft position.
You idiots. You're supposed to lose. They would have had the number. But you know why it doesn't matter? Because the Texans don't have their pick this draft, do they? Let me double check that before I speak erroneously. But yeah, I'm pretty sure somebody else has the Texans draft pick in the first round.
Michael says it's anybody saying Jonathan Taylor should be in the MVP conversation.
Oh my God, we're going to talk about that coming up next. I'm never upset about this kind of stuff, but I have seen too many people who I respect in the NFL actively lobbying for a dude who it took 3 weeks for him to eclipse Derrick Henry as far as rushing yards are concerned for MVP of the damn NFL. Stop it. You know what? We're going to do that because I'm passionate about it, and it's coming up next.